Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Peter Athanasopoulos from Spinal Cord Injury Ontario.
So tell me a little bit about your experiences with Spinal Cord Injury Ontario.
Spinal Cord Injury Ontario is a nonprofit organization. We're celebrating 75 years this year, where we support people with spinal cord injuries and other physical disabilities to live the life they choose in a fully inclusive Ontario. So we support people to become, or support them to help them feel more independent, self-reliant, and opportunities to have full community participation after sustaining a spinal cord injury.
So, can you give me an overview of some of the programs and services you offer?
Sure. The core of Spinal Cord Injury Ontario is its peer program. The organization was built on the philosophy that the experience of people with lived experience in spinal cord injuries have huge knowledge to share with newly injured people with spinal cord injuries to help them with their journey to recovery. It's built on the notion of utilizing the experience of people who have tried and succeeded in certain aspects of their rehabilitation themselves and applying that learning to somebody else who's trying it for the first time. So our peer support program is the cornerstone of what we do. We also provide regional coordination, which is a service that we provide across Ontario where we assist people with system navigation, helping them throughout all the aspects from point of injury all the way through to living independently for years with a spinal cord injury. We also provide employment services, helping people get back to work, as well as information services. We also have developed a program called CoreTree, which is a knowledge exchange, a platform where people can learn different aspects about spinal cord injuries, take courses in terms of understanding different aspects of self-reliance to help and assist people become as independent as they choose. So that's pretty much our organization in terms of programs and services. We also are the largest spinal cord injury organization in the province and are leaders in public policy and government relations with our SCI community as well.
So when you mention navigation of systems following an injury, I'm wondering, what sorts of challenges present themselves in that?
So really early on in a traumatic spinal cord injury, as I'm sure you can imagine, the emotional roller coaster that occurs around people being told potentially that they may be paralyzed for the rest of their life, and the emotional roller coaster on understanding what that means, potential there can be in terms of recovery and walking again or regaining function. So preparing people in the early onset of what that looks like and preparing people from emergency to an acute care trauma center and entering an inpatient rehabilitation process where they'll be working with physios, OTs, recreational therapists, social workers of the like, as well as our services to help people prepare to live independently in the community. Aspects of those include access to mobility devices, access to medical supplies, preparing to reduce secondary complications and pressure sores, pain management, social isolation, preparing people for housing, reorganizing their finances, and helping them get ultimately back to work. So there's a huge sequence of supports that need to happen when a person's life gets turned upside down from having a spinal cord injury and picking up the pieces and rebuilding a puzzle to living a fantastic life again.
So, in your time with Spinal Cord Injury Ontario, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Well, one of the things that we've been working on in the last year and a half, which has been hugely timely, was the ability to provide virtual supports across the province for all our services. So having the ability not to replace face-to-face, but having the ability to do some of the work that we provide in terms of peer support, in terms of navigating a community's healthcare system or community through virtual supports and programs. So we built this program called VIP for SCI. It stands for Virtual Integration Platform for People with Spinal Cord Injury, where people with spinal cord injuries have the capability of connecting with us regardless of where we live, where they live, and access equitable services. While we have offices in most regions across Ontario, face-to-face will never be replaced, but the ability for one of our staff not having to drive, per se, 300 kilometers from Sault Ste. Marie to Thunder Bay to facilitate some support is hugely important, particularly in the events of what we're dealing with today with COVID-19. It really strengthened our ability to keep our community connected, keep them engaged, support them with PPE or any other associated pandemic challenges that they were having. So that was a huge success for us to be able to build a virtual platform for our organization and immediately launch it before its launch date to be able to address the needs of our community due to COVID-19. That's one of the big successes that we've been working on over the last year and a half.
So if you could send any message to the community about why your work needs to continue and why it matters, what would you say?
Well, if I would ask people to support Spinal Cord Injury Ontario to help us keep people safe and at home and have the tools to be able to live effectively and independently. SCI Ontario has launched a campaign called Safe at Home. It's on our website at www.sciontario.org. It's right on the front page called Safe at Home. And what we're trying to do right now is sign up as many people as we can to feel connected to the disability community and the spinal cord injury community through VIP for SCI. A lot of our community members are on social assistance, and a lot of our community members at times don't even have a cell phone or internet. And in order to access VIP for SCI, you need that internet and smartphone to be connected. So part of our campaign over the last few months has been raising funds to provide to our clients to have the means of being safe at home and access the services they need to be independent and self-reliant. So that would be my message to your community here live, is to consider supporting Safe at Home through Spinal Cord Injury Ontario.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Laura Stairs from Legal Assistance of Windsor. So tell me a little bit about how your work has supported people with disabilities in the community.
Sure. So I'm a lawyer at Legal Assistance of Windsor. I work in the public benefits area. So I work primarily on ODSP and OW cases, doing appeals before the Social Benefits Tribunal. So with ODSP recipients, we are primarily assisting people to actually get on to ODSP. So people who have applied and been denied, we're helping them with those appeals. We also do appeals for people who are already on ODSP and having difficulty accessing specific benefits, or who have been assessed an overpayment, or who have been cut off for any reason.
So how has the recent pandemic affected this work?
There's been significant changes, primarily to how we advocate before the Social Benefits Tribunal. But with respect to our clients, we're seeing new benefits being introduced, and they're either accessing them when they may not be eligible for them, which could result in issues coming down the road, or they're trying to access benefits that they actually are entitled to and are having difficulty getting access to them.
So in your work, I'd imagine that you've at times advocated for people who might have something like a mental health condition and might not necessarily be able to articulate what exactly they need.
Certainly, that happens often.
So, are there any challenges in that particular arena of this work?
Absolutely. We are really lucky at my clinic to have social work staff on site. So, once we begin working with a client and we understand that they may have specific mental health challenges that require additional assistance in advocating for what these clients need, we can bring in our social work services and have them assist so that we're providing a more holistic service to our clients that includes the legal part that I do, but also the more social part that our social workers do.
In your time providing legal services for people with disabilities, has there been any success case that stands out for you?
That's a tough one. We had one client who struggled with a lot of issues and had major trust issues, which is something that we face often because our clients are, they are abused by the system that they're in, and they're taken advantage of, and they're not given access to the things that they deserve. So trust is a huge issue that we have to overcome with our clients. And this client just did not trust the clinic, did not trust what we were doing, which makes it really difficult to provide legal services. But as we developed a relationship and got to know this client a little bit better, we were able to access information about the resources that she had been accessing in the community. So we can reach out to our partners and see, how is this client interacting with you? And through gathering information from all of those different community organizations, we were able to get a much fuller picture of what this client was experiencing. And by submitting all of that information to the tribunal, we were able to get her access to ODSP benefits in a way that we certainly wouldn't have been able to if we didn't have those relationships in the community and ability to access information.
So, given the current climate of things, do you think there's any misinformation out there about the benefits that are available? And if so, what should you say about it?
About the benefits that are available from the federal government?
Yes, in contrasting with ODSP, because I've heard the whole gamut of what you can actually legally access at this point.
Right. I think there's a general perception that CERB is free money, that everyone can get CERB, and that if you apply for it, you're going to get it, and then you can keep it. And what we're hearing is that it's very easy to access CERB, but many people who may be accessing it might not actually be eligible for it. And so we're concerned about how the federal government is going to respond to people who have accessed the benefit without being actually entitled to it, because this could result in huge issues down the road, both with the federal government, along with issues on your social assistance check. So for both OW and ODSP recipients, because CERB currently is being treated as employment income for the purposes of OW and ODSP, which means you're going to see a deduction on your ODSP check if you do access CERB. The issue may come that we're concerned about that the federal government asks you to pay back that money, and then you're put in a position where you may be potentially paying back money that had actually been deducted from your ODSP check, which could mean that you're out that money kind of twice.
So I assume the deductions would be temporary, just in terms of overpayments, just to get things balanced again.
Right. So as it stands right now, if you access CERB in 1 month, then your ODSP check is going to be reduced for that month. And it's only going to be reduced during the month that you actually receive CERB.
So what message would you send to the community about your work and the ongoing need to support people with disabilities in the legal community?
I would say that we're here, and I would hope that the community would get to know these services and understand what we are able to do. We try and take preventative action with our clients. So as soon as someone might have an inkling of a problem, we would love for them to come into our door and start asking us questions about it. Because we would love to cut those problems off before they turn into something that could have major consequences on your life. So I would say we're here for the simplest, smallest of questions, and all the way until you have a major legal issue on your hands.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Certainly.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Office of Human Rights, Equity, and Accessibility at UWindsor understands the challenges of caring for a child while pursuing your education. The Breastfeeding Room, located in Chrysler Hall Tower, room 320, is a well-lit, private space equipped with a refrigerator, electric kettle, microwave oven, comfortable seating, and a diaper-changing table to care for your little one. This room may be accessed with an authorized key card. For more information about the Breastfeeding Room, or to gain access, contact the OHREA office at 519-253-3000, extension 3400, or at uwindsor.ca/OHREA.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Laura Stairs from Legal Assistance in Windsor and from Peter Athanasopoulos from Spinal Cord Injury Ontario.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Melinda Kramer from the American Dance Wheels Foundation. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with the Dance Wheels Foundation.
Okay, so American Dance Wheels actually started as a foundation in 2006. So it's been around for a really long time, obviously. And in 2000, and we were actually doing it for a few years before that, probably 3 or 4 years before that. We've had an evolution of what the organization is about. It started off just as a group of people that wanted to, that used a wheelchair, that wanted to dance. And so we were very fortunate because my daughter, who had a disability, she became disabled at 11, wanted to continue dancing, and she wasn't able to, obviously, because she was using a wheelchair. And so at that time, there wasn't anything. And this goes back in, I guess it was around 2000, 2001. And so we were fortunate enough to have a very creative dance teacher that we were working with, that I was dancing with. I was dancing as a standing partner with two standing partners. And she said, well, there's no reason why somebody using a wheelchair can't dance. And we met this young man who was an extreme athlete in a wheelchair. And he was very interested because he wanted to pick up girls. And he figured if he learned how to dance, he could do that. So anyway, so she needed someone to dance with him and who knew how to dance, you know, relatively, you know, had taken ballroom and Latin dance lessons. And so I was the standing partner. He was the seated dancer, this athlete, and the dance teacher. And with the three of us together, we were able to put steps together that were real steps. So we took the book, we figured out what the real step would look like using a wheelchair. And so it was one person using a wheelchair, one person, you know, one person standing, one person seated. And in the very beginning, all we did was go to clubs, try it out, see what people thought. They were totally mesmerized by him, obviously. And then we started showing it to the dance world. And so there started to be like interest from the dance world. And we went to all of these different places, dance parties and competitions that are usual competitions that ballroom dancers that ballroom dancing is known for. They take their people so that they're able to compete. And we would be like a headline with our wheelchair dancing. And there was an awful lot of interest, except that we were the only ones that knew how to do it. So, and I'm talking about in the entire United States. There was no one when we started. Now, there was ballet, but there was no partner dancing, as in ballroom and Latin. So we wrote it down. We wrote a book. We wrote all the steps down. Took us, you know, hundreds of hours to perfect it and to be able to write it in real dance language. And we began teaching it to dance teachers. And also, eventually, the interest was also in the community of people that work with people with disabilities for rehabilitation. So that's essentially, we went from strictly a performance group and a group that went out just to show it and to get people to understand that people with a disability can dance and they can really dance and they had real steps. And then we sort of evolved into something bigger and actually more important.
So given the current climate of things with the pandemic, how have you been able to support your dancers through these times?
Well, unfortunately, because it's partner dancing, it makes it very difficult. It's not like you can do it alone. You know, you need a partner. So we've been trying to figure out a way to, I mean, we've been teaching on Skype for the last 6 years. So the Skype lessons would not be a problem for us. We teach classes and individuals. We teach people how to dance on Skype all over the country and the world, actually, that want to learn how to do this. Either they're getting married or they just want to learn to dance. Or in some cases, they want to be teachers and therapists for people that use wheelchairs and their standing partner. Having said that, if you can't be with a partner, it makes it difficult. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out a way to entice people to dance with whoever is in their home. So we put out a little teaser and to see what we would get, and we actually are going to do a video of people dancing in their own homes to A Whole New World, which is from one of the movies, the Disney movies, Aladdin. And we're hoping that people will see that if they dance with their mother or their father or if they live with a partner, obviously, but we sort of put it out. We were really surprised at how many people from that didn't know us at all were very interested in learning how to dance with somebody in their own home. So the answer is that we would like to start doing more Skype lessons, and we think that this is the beginning of that for people that don't know us. So that's how we hope to support them.
So in your time with the Dance Wheels Foundation, What's been the greatest success moment you've witnessed?
Well, for me personally, my experience with people that use wheelchairs, use walkers, use some kind of assistive device, it has been amazing to me how open they, particularly the younger people, have been to learn how to dance and to be real dancers. We teach in schools and school districts, and so these kids are very often not given an opportunity to take a real sports class, you know, like a gym class. So we have been using the dance criteria, the curriculum, to give them an opportunity to do something with the other students in their school that is athletic and creates a real bond between the two worlds. And it's been very successful. So for me, that is a real plus, because I know that it was difficult for my daughter to participate. And this was something she could do with anyone that knew how to dance or that was willing to learn. So
if you could send any message to the community about the need for programs like this, what would you say?
Well, I think it goes both ways. I think that there are a lot of, obviously, people that that are kept from what I consider to be one of the greatest things in the world, which is dance and music, until now. And particularly to have the opportunity to do something that is real and has been, you know, a favorite of everyone from, you know, going to a wedding to a performance or to a competition. They're really able to participate. And it goes for the standing partner as well, because they are learning something that they probably did not know before. They probably did not know that somebody that uses a wheelchair, for instance, has the ability to do many, many things. And, you know, you have these perceptions that all of a sudden melt away. They just completely melt away, because you're learning your part and they're learning theirs. And if you don't come together and do it together, you can't dance, because there's rhythm involved, there's lead and follow involved, there's all the things that anyone would do, that two people do when they actually dance together. So I think that this enables people to learn about each other. And so from my standpoint, that's been like a really big highlight.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
My friends, remarkable the use of technology to keep people together. For people with disabilities who have this all-important sense of community, this closeness, this sort of unspoken bond, it's an amazing thing that their supporters are able to be there, whether it be to help them navigate complicated systems or deal with hard times or just share a laugh or a story. Times like this, we're all feeling the effects, and people with disabilities are no different than that. So, it's great that we're finding ways just to keep together, knowing in our hearts that we all matter in this community. We're all part of this great tapestry. And whether we're in a place that can be open right now, or if we're having to find, shall we say, creative means, the fact is, we're all stronger as a community when we make the effort to reach out to one another. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.